Welcome to Mac and Cheese, episode number 11, and it's my turn to co-host because I'm still learning at this, and across the table from me is the one and only Mac Mail, and I am Graham Hicks, and I should let Mac give his own name, but oh well.
Next time.
We were talking about a subject, and this is really where we're going to play up our age difference and our sort of different cultural spheres within the same society, and that is a lot of you guys that are so in the social media have got together and are putting together an award show called the Yeggies, which is basically to sort of honor the 100 or so people in this town who have developed their own little channels that comment on the city or comment on all kinds of things that have created this very interesting, what I like to call the new newspaper. I guess my question is, why? Why do people do this? First of all, why is there an awards ceremony?
Yeah.
And B, why do people do it?
Well, there's an awards ceremony because Adam Rosenhart decided that it would be a good idea to celebrate local content creators.
And when Adam decides to do something, it happens.
He makes it happen.
All right.
He's one of those guys.
He just happened to sit at the same table with us producing this show. Yay, Adam.
Yeah, I think there's hundreds of people that have used...
I asked him if he wanted to do an interview, but he said no. He's microphone shy,
he's
I guess.
He's overexposed, maybe, on Vegas. There's hundreds
Don't
of people
blush.
Locally that are doing great things online, right? And it doesn't have to be just about Edmonton. It could just be that they're producing content about something and they live in Edmonton.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a local-based, you know, content producer. And they're making use of these really exciting tools that we now have that, you know, mainstream media have started to adopt. And, you know, it was, I think, a really good idea to say we should recognize the work that goes into all of those productions.
You're the statistician. What would you say has become the balance between the professional media that used to have 95% dominance over what mm-hmm. we thought, or everything that was mass, went before more than 40 people at a time.
Yeah.
What percentage today is coming from the mass media? What percentage is coming from all these thousands of little stars in the sky that together are producing a big sunlight?
Good question.
You have no idea?
I'm not sure what that breakdown would be. I think that what's interesting is that now everybody's kind of, you know, on a level playing field. If you look at Twitter, it's not like mainstream media have special accounts.
Nope.
They have the same account as I do or anyone else,
Yeah,
right?
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, very equal, right?
Very equal. So when you see something on Twitter, it matters a little less than it maybe used to where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you're following a hashtag and that's, you know, you're looking for a topic and you're looking for updates on a particular topic. It may come from a mainstream media journalist or something. It may come from an individual. And that's kind of the power that social media has shifted, right?
What's the motivation for people to be now that they're in this sort of this top 100? If you look at those people, maybe about 20% are professional journalists or writers of some sort, but the other 80% are doing it without any kind of compensation other than interest?
Maybe it's a passion thing for them. Like mm-hmm. for me, for instance, you know, I do it because I enjoy it. I get utility out of it. I learn things, I meet new people, I get new opportunities, those kinds of things. I think some people make money at it. Some people have ads and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Other people, as you know, being a food writer, will get invited to things, and that's a form of payment. You know, you maybe get your meals and stuff like that. But I think there's a lot of people that do it just because it's a creative outlet for them, and it's easy to do. You know, way easier than it ever used to be.
Mm-hmm. Do you think how many would do it out of the need for attention or the need to be respected, you know, for the very psychological motives?
Probably there's some. I think it's increasingly difficult for those people to find satisfaction, though, because to get attention, you need to have good stuff, number one,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, if your content sucks and you're not putting out anything of value, then it doesn't matter. Nobody's going to pay attention, right? So you gotta have that first and foremost. And then I think it does feed on itself, right? I mean, I certainly... I am more well read online now than I was when I started, and part of that is you got to build up over time, right? Just like
mm-hmm.
our podcast, we'll have more listeners tomorrow than we did yesterday, right?
Well, because it's so darned intelligent.
Yeah, you got to build it up. So it takes effort, right? It takes work. It's not like you can put out a tweet and be famous overnight or anything like that.
Some of the real concerns I have are more on credibility. The one thing I haven't quite got my head around is in the journalism world that I was in for my entire career,
yeah,
you were working 8 hours a day. You had to make sure all your stuff was correct. You had to make sure you had a good solid foundation because you were a professional and your own credibility would die very quickly. I read an awful lot on the Twitter stuff that I'm, you know, waiting for the LRT and all that, and I kind of take it with a big grain of salt because I don't know how much access that person who's doing this was able to research, was able to reach a well-rounded conclusion, as opposed to talking to their friends and then going, saying, that's not right about that, you know, oh, the mayor's full of you know what, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a difference between opinion and somebody trying to share facts or information and stuff, right? I think the biggest difference, though, between, you know, the old way of doing things and the new way of doing things is that we used to have checks and balances. So you'd write something, but there were editors who would read your stuff, right?
You could get sued.
And there was lawyers who read stuff. You know, there was those checks and balances, which we don't have today. And the mainstream media can't afford to have anymore either, actually.
Yeah, practically, you're right.
So that's a big shift that's happened. And you move from a sort of command and control model into one where if I post something and it's wrong, I get people tweeting or commenting or Facebooking and telling me right away that it's wrong. So they help me correct that kind of thing, right?
And you do find that?
Yeah, I do find that. Sometimes, for sure, I'll make a mistake. I'm only human. And somebody will tweet me and they'll be like, oh, you totally messed up the third point or whatever in your
notes. But you will see three or four people. Will they be on your case immediately? And you say, oops, okay.
Yeah, a couple people anyway. Yeah. I try to have an editor. So I try to get Sharon to read everything before I post it.
I'm going to bed, honey. That's your problem.
And then that's when people tweet me and say, hey, you got it wrong.
Yeah.
So there's that, but I think we have this dream that journalists were completely objective and had no bias and no opinion, and
there's no such thing,
right? Yeah. So I think if you embrace that notion that there is no such thing as the view from nowhere, then it's easier to look at social media with less tinted eyes.
Okay. I would still, one of the things I appreciate about the Yeggies is that it sort of helps me define, okay, these are obviously, these people have been singled out for awards, or enough people have contacted Adam and said, this person deserves to be on this. To me, that gives them a lot of credibility, and I'm going to be more interested in following them. But let me segue that, and that is, I find continually with Twitter, which I love Twitter as this quick index. You know, I can skim through, and there's things I can, you know, click on it, and away I can go to find it.
Yep.
But the context of what I'm reading it is usually on my mobile device when I'm waiting for the LRT or whatever, that my time is very limited, and there's going to be 5 a minute being added that I lose so much information that I'd like to keep a hold of. And I find that frustrating, that there was some good stuff that I'd love us to be able to click on and somehow, okay, save that.
Yep.
But you guys were telling me that you have the same problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's different strategies you can use to try to avoid it, to mitigate it. So one that is really common is people will use the favorite feature on Twitter. So if you see a tweet, you can favorite it. Mm-hmm. There's a little star icon, and that'll save it. And then you can go back later and you can look at your favorites and see the stuff that you saved earlier on, right?
The only trouble is by the end of the week, you're going to have 200 favorites.
You could, potentially, depending on how many things you're favoriting, yeah. Another thing that I use is called Readability, and there's other services like Read It Later and a whole bunch. And they basically allow you to save a link in a reading basket. Okay. So if I find a bunch of long stuff that I really want to read, I'll save it right now, and then I'll go back on the weekend and I'll read through that stuff. So you can use some services like that to save links. Yeah, it can be useful.
So you recommend Readability?
I like Readability, yeah. It also strips out all the ads.
Sorry,
the rest
this
of
is
it.
Where my idea. It's an app or?
It's an app, I guess. You know, the line is blurring. It's a website and an app, and it kind of works on both platforms. So you can get an app for your phone, or you can just use the web page. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm still struggling with the sheer deluge of information.
Yeah. See, I think this is an opportunity a big opportunity in the online world right now is sort of the idea of aggregation and curation.
These are pretty funny big words you're using here, pal.
So let me explain. Aggregation is kind of what you do when you search for a hashtag on Twitter. You're basically saying, show me all the stuff that's related to this.
Sure.
But the tools that we have to
do
that
right
now
are...
We
used to call it the entertainment section, the sports section.
The bundles.
Yeah, the front page news.
Yeah.
Okay. But now we call it aggregation.
We've got to get technical with it. Yeah.
Okay.
But the tools we have for those are pretty limited, right? They're pretty rudimentary still. So I think there's lots of room to improve there. The more interesting one, the one we're seeing lots of action on, is curation. So this is the idea that you, Graham, are an expert on business, and you'll go and find, you know, the 20 things that people in Edmonton should know about business this week.
So I start my own site that says, I'm really good at this business stuff. You're going to read these 20, well, which is in essence what we all do as media commentators anyways. Our strength is in knowing what's of interest to the population and presenting it in a way. But
and there's some great tools to help with this now, right? So yeah. It doesn't have to be that you go and set up a website. You could use something like Storify, which lets you pull in links and tweets and photos and things like that to craft a bit of a stream, right? You could just do it with Twitter. You could create a HicksBiz hashtag and every day post out a link using that, and that's a way to sort of curate it.
Mac, where do you find the time? Like, do you play around with these things? Do you do Storify? Do you do readability? Where do you find the time? And every 3 weeks, there's a brand new one that you really ought to learn about.
Yeah.
I never seem to worry about, like, for me, it's like this, and you just sort of seem to be very zen-like about this whole thing.
Well, early on, I was very much like, oh my God, I can't miss anything.
Okay.
And I was like, you know, I'd get separation anxiety if I was away from Twitter for too long. And I had to just learn to get over that, basically. You can't read everything. There's too much of it.
I'm in love with my Twitter. Okay.
So there's that. Mm-hmm. Got to learn to sort of deal with it. But I try to use some of the tools, and I try to explore the new stuff, but probably not as much as I used to.
Do you still add on like 10 followers a day on Twitter? Like, do you, you know, does everyone comes along and says, I'm following you, do you look at them and say, okay.
No, I add people way less frequently than I used to. I try new services less frequently than I used to. I've sort of moved into
the... Oh, you're getting old.
I'm getting old, no. I need to find the tools that I'm going to get the most out of, and then I'm going to put the most effort into those, right?
Yeah, maybe it's okay. Maybe I really am. Even though I'm sorry, I get up in the morning, I go downstairs, I go out the door, no matter if it's 10 below zero, I lean around and I take my 3 newspapers out of the box, and I want to sit down with a cup of coffee, and my idea of heaven is having 40 minutes to be in what Marshall McLuhan used to call the bath of just reading the news.
Yep.
And when I think of it, you know, when you use the terms like aggregation and all that, I think so much of it was actually there, or still is there, but it's just a different sensation of how you absorb news as opposed to this rat-a-tat, 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 and on the actual textile feel of the screen,
yeah.
I somehow never find it as satisfying.
Hmm. See, I'm not a big fan of the feel of newsprint. I hate that it makes my fingers black, you know, all those kinds of things.
What's this world coming to?
But actually, I think, you know, it's not that different. I also...
Do you read books?
Grab the paper and kind of read it, except that my paper is digital, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll use an app like Pulse is another one that aggregates stuff together, or Google Reader, and that's kind of like my digital bundle of newspapers, right?
Do you sit down with your little, your iPad, whatever you call this one here? I know Surface, you're a Windows guy or whatever, but do you get lost in it for half an hour in the morning?
Yeah, not so much during the week, but definitely on the weekends and in evenings, you know, when I'm sitting down after I've had dinner or whatever. Yeah, it's easy to get lost in there because it's always bringing television? So much stuff to me. Yeah, I don't watch a whole lot of television. I think that's one of the big things, right? Most people in North America have another full-time job, which is watching television. They watch an average of like 40 hours of TV a week.
Is that changing?
Yeah, it's changing, right? And that's another reason why we do have so many interesting people doing some great online content here in Edmonton and other places, is just that's shifting, right? People are spending a little less time on television, certainly on live television, right? Mm-hmm. And they're maybe spending a bit more time on creative endeavors.
It does worry me that this whole thing is somewhat exclusive.
Yeah, I mean, I think one way to look at it is that it's still pretty new. I mean, Twitter's only been around for 5 or 6 years or something like that.
That just makes me want to lie down and take a nap. It makes me so tired just to think about what's coming.
And when you look at online communities, I think it's a pretty well-established breakdown that the vast majority of the people consume. A smaller proportion of them share or comment or contribute in a small way, and a tiny fraction of them are the ones that create all the content.
But we just finished talking about it, and I'd almost argue separately with you that I even think, you know, the guy that's the hoser with the, you know, he's still constantly, he's tweeting to his friends and Facebooking, and I would argue that they're just as involved, but maybe they're not interested in this sort of central core that gets more of the attention. They're more interested in their motorcycle club.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, they really don't care about all this stuff.
Yeah, no, for sure. There's definitely going to be lots of people who are creating content just for themselves and their friends or themselves and their family or whatever, and they're not thinking about it the way that I think about it, right? Mm-hmm. And so you end up with different types of communities, different types of users. Yeah, for sure. That happens, I think, in any community.
You ever going to figure out how to make some real money out of this?
You know, I'm happy doing it because I like to do it and for what I get out of it. And I think if I started
Mac, you don't want to make 150 grand a year?
Oh, I don't know if I can make 150 grand a year doing it. I think
no, but you don't want to make 150 grand?
Yeah, sure.
Are you literally sort of beyond materialism?
No, for sure. Who wouldn't want to make that? But do I want to make it doing what I'm doing in social media? Not so sure.
He's such a purist, boy. Meanwhile, you're up for a couple of awards in the Yeggies. I'd be surprised if you weren't.
I am.
You know, he's always so coy. He'll never tell anybody how many people actually read his blog, but all you have to do is look into the Twitter following. It's 500 trillion people. And you want to get something happening, you call MacMail. So that's why I'm here, just to curry up favor with him. And right now I'm going to bribe him with a little cheese.
I can take that bribe.
And we are trying today something called Munster, which I had always thought was a German cheese, but not at all. According to my trusty Wikipedia, which I looked up on my mobile device.
It's never wrong.
Well, there's a whole other topic, yeah. Isn't it? But this stuff is an American cheese.
Oh, interesting.
And it's sort of a soft cream cheese, and I don't really see too much. It's one of those cheeses I think you might go to a party and just sort of aimlessly nibble down because you're hungry.
Yeah. You'd see it on a cheese plate, a cheese board, or something like that, just chunks.
So do we give it any kind of rating?
Seems like it might be a good melting cheese, actually.
Mm-hmm. Nice and creamy under a nice piece of Wonder Bread.
Yeah. Nice burger or something like that.
Well, good luck at the Yegi. It's still 3 weeks away, so we'll probably be talking about other things as we get there.
Yeah, lots of time for people to get tickets.
When's it happening?
May the 4th.
It's not going to be a virtual.
It's going to be a real live event.
People can reach out and touch each other.
Yeah. It'll be kind of creepy.
And on that note.
It should be fun. All right. That's another episode of Mac and Cheese. You can check us out at macandcheese.ca. I'm Mac Mail.
And I'm Graham Hicks and our friend Munster Cheese. And thank you to Adam for, even though he doesn't like to talk, he does an awful lot in the community. Our producer.